He is, well, I don't think it's overstating it to say he is a legendary figure in the broadcasting business. He will have his usual spot in the broadcast booth at Augusta in just a few weeks. We've been talking about what that might look like. He does NFL broadcasts, had a new partner this year, seemed to enjoy that. He's getting ready for the NCAA tournament, which is gets underway later this week. Jim Nance joins us from CBS. Mr. Nance, how are you?
I'm well, and my head is swelling thanks to that that lovely introduction. Thank you for having me on here. It's an honor.
It's our pleasure to have you here. We spent some time just a few minutes before you came on talking about what took place at Innisbrook this week and pondered the what we thought was the impossible just a few weeks ago, but now all of a sudden looks possible. Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods in the final group Sunday afternoon at Augusta. Tell me what you think of these two past 40 legends, the two winningest guys out on tour right now. They're not backing up. They're going in the right direction.
No, they're not. And you are an excellent scriptwriter. I'd like to bring you down to Augusta and finish off the final chapter of that great movie that you just spoke of.
Yeah, well.
I love the sound of that. It's not out of the question by any means. They obviously are both on full go and primed to do something. And to get a Phil-Tiger pairing Sunday at the Masters, yeah, that's almost like a dream sequence. It's a good time for the game. I mean, obviously, to get Phil back as a winner for the first time in 5 years, and I think it's pretty obvious the Tigers, he's going to have a win here before too long, maybe even this week at Bay Hill. And then you got the young brigades, some of whom are lost right now at the moment, like Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth, but that's not going to last forever. So 3 weeks from now, they might have their games back in peak form. So, you know, I get this time of the year, though, Bob, and I get asked about the Masters like every day of my life.
Really?
And I have the next couple of weeks are so much fun. Hanging out with two great guys and a production team that I love and have known for over 30 years, the producer and the director. And I won't enjoy every minute of it, but the Masters is just, it pops up. I can prepare for a basketball game, and it, without fail, a coach will come over and he'll want to talk to me about the Masters. I'm trying to get information, trying to glean a nugget or two for my basketball game, and they want to talk about the tournament. But that's the way it works. That's just I guess it's a good thing.
Richard, jump in.
Yeah, Jim, because time is short, we're going to pop around to a lot of different places with you. And I've talked to you in long form on the podcast that I do. And one of the things I was struck by was the immediate chemistry that you and Tony Romo had this year, as well as just how successful a first year Tony Romo had as a broadcaster. And that is not always the case. Why do you think Tony had such success in his first year in the booth?
Well, I think it's a big question, Richard. You know, it's easy to say that he's a natural. There's definitely part of that is that that's just Tony's personality that's coming out on the air. And, you know, there are a lot of people that have big personalities that somehow are not able to bring that to the booth. You've seen it, and people you think are can't-miss candidates in any given sport, and for some reason it just doesn't translate once you go live. But Tony was comfortable. He was prepared. We spent an inordinate amount of time over the summer trying to get simulations underway and put him in practice games that made him feel like once we started for real that it was just what we've been doing for the past 3 or 4 months. And, you know, there is another thing, too. I really believe in the whole chemistry thing. And there are a lot of arranged marriages in sports television. You know, people think, well, this guy with that guy, these two people together, it should work, but they don't know one another. And then you're told, hey, guys, you know, give us some good chemistry. Go have fun. You know, sometimes it's hard to have fun with someone you don't know. But when you do know someone and you do have some natural chemistry, I think it frees you up. And I think Tony felt that way, and I know I felt that way. Now, I've known him a long time. Of course, I got to know him much better traveling with him for a 21-week span and all the summer reps that we had as well. And I think we were able to just kind of carry him over to the booth, an attitude and an atmosphere that Tony was feeling away from the booth. What he was feeling at the dinner table the night before, wherever the case may be. We enjoyed each other's company. We had a lot of laughs. And, man, to be able to transfer that to the actual broadcast, it's a good feeling. You know, you can tell when you're in that slot, and I can tell when my pet is in that slot. There's nothing more important to me as a play-by-play guy than the person sitting next to me, the analyst, being comfortable and then being set up and being put in the best possible position. I feel like that's maybe my primary role. So, you know, Tony was just a dream to work with. But like I say, I've known him for a long time. It didn't shock me that he was going to be great at this. And there were a lot of people that were, you know, that it was foreign to him. The idea, Tony Romo's going to get TV? He's going to get the number one job right away? What are they thinking? They're crazy. Nobody does this. You know, I sat back and just watched and laughed and read and listened. I heard a lot of talk radio. There were a lot of experts out there that had no clue. And here I am working these practice games, and I knew I couldn't wait for September the 10th to roll around because I knew what he was going to bring.
With Jim Nantz of CBS, for the purpose of relating to the audience something that they may or may not be aware of, how much time do you spend with your color partner in the booth before a game prepping? Is there much? Is there a little? I know you have production meetings with all of the crew, but how much time will the two of you sit down and spend before a game?
Now, it depends. Are we talking Tony here? Are we talking Grant and Rafter this week?
No, you and
I mean, I think it all is the same.
Well, but you and Tony specifically.
Well, in that case, you know, we early on, there was a lot of tonnage there of broadcasts. We had Thursday night football. We had Sunday games. And
right.
Pretty much staying on the road for a large part of the first half the season. And, there's these production meetings, and that's mandatory, and that's a part of the process that's essential because you got to get fresh information. Media guide material is so stale, and you just don't even want to go there. And the really good stuff that you glean is coming from these production meetings. But beyond that, when it really gets good is when you want to spend time beyond those production meetings, which are mandatory. And, you know, some people want to do that, others don't. And you know, a lot of people would rather maybe kind of go off and read on their own. I would rather read into the week. And when I get on the site, I want to spend as much time as I can with the analyst. This is a good example here. This happens to be, I think, maybe my hardest week of the year. I just did three games over the weekend. I was in Orlando, and I left Orlando early this morning, and now I'm out in California. And I'm leaving in 36 hours to go right back to the coast to broadcast six games in 3 days with eight teams that I'm learning right now as the afternoon goes on. I just got off the phone before this call with UMBC, that would be University of Maryland, Baltimore County. They don't want to be known as the full name. And I'm finding out about that squad and what they're about. And I'm going to read and have very little sleep between now and when I get on the ground in Charlotte on Wednesday. But once I get there, Grant and Raff and Mark Wolf and Bob Fishman and I, Tracy Wolfson, we'll be pretty much inseparable. And we really don't get a long season together, but it is a good time. And yeah, it's a high time. It's all about sitting around the games and meeting with people and talking basketball, watching other games on the days we're not on the air. But yeah, that's the thing is that you spend a lot of time with your analysts. I can't quantify what the number would be, but the more the better.
Jim, is there a team in this tournament? And this tournament is interesting because there's not the quote-unquote super team that we've seen in years past, you know, an undefeated Kentucky team with five first-round picks. Is there a team that you are curious about, at least in this first weekend, to see how they play that might tip us off as a viewer for a long run for that team?
That's a good one. I would say that I'm going to Charlotte, as I mentioned, and I've got Virginia and North Carolina, both of whom could possibly make a great run through the tournament. Virginia is the overall number one seed. But I know we're going to look for something a little bit less obvious than that. You know, the first thing that springs to mind is Arizona. You know, with all the stuff that's going on over college football and basketball, but really primarily this sport, college basketball, and all that has come down on the University of Arizona and the reports that are out there and things that have been denied on the coach's part, the school sticking by the coach. They've got a gifted freshman player. They got several really gifted players on that squad, and they're not a really high four seed, but you know they have the talent, you would think, to make a really good run. And how are they going to handle all this talk? And unfortunately, this has been a really rough stretch for college basketball. It's undeniable. And that's going to be a team that I think more than any is going to be the one that, as college basketball is on the precipice of really making some serious changes to how they write the rule book and how they operate the business plan, Arizona is going to be a team that has the ability to keep this story, this FBI probe, and all the other things that have come with it. I think they have the ability to be good enough to keep the story on the front page of the newspaper as a good news, bad news, a good run. But what is this team all about? What's the real story behind it? That's the one I'm most curious to see, is how they handle all the attention. Are they good enough to go out and play and maybe possibly win this thing? I suspect they could do that.
With Jim Nance of CBS, before we let you go, if they told you could only do one thing, if they told you your days as a multi-sport broadcaster are over, and I don't anticipate that's ever going to happen to you, but if they did and you got one more thing, is it an NFL Super Bowl? Is it a Final Four? Is it Augusta? Is it something else? What would you do? What would you want?
This July, the third week of July, I come back to Toronto again for the RBC Canadian Open. You know what I'd really like to do? I'd like to come in one day and do the entire afternoon with you guys.
Ah, done deal.
That would be my goal, and I mean that. I love coming to Toronto. I mentioned that to you, Richard, in an email last week. My family's very fond of it. We'd almost turn it into like a week of mostly vacation time for the family, and Dad goes out and covers golf at Glen Abbey. But we've found a lot of friendships up there that are special to us, and we've enjoyed the city. And if you guys would be willing to have me, I'll put that one right there on the top of the list. That one's I haven't done before, so we'll tuck that one away if you guys will have me.
We'll have you.
And then which one of those sports is my favorite? You know, I have three kids, and it's impossible to name which one I love the most. I love them all the same. So as I'm in the middle of this joyride called March Madness, and then I land at the doorstep of Augusta the day after the championship game, and this coming football season is a Super Bowl season, I mean, how do I pick one of those? It's impossible. I just feel very lucky that I have the chance to do any of them, to be honest.
Jim, I have one more for me, and I know Bob will appreciate this. Sure. As a great golf fan. You have told me the story that when you were a boy, you would travel with your father to a couple of golf tournaments, and rather than focus on the golfers, you would try very hard to hear the broadcasters, to try to go near the broadcast booth and just get a little glimpse of the people who you had heard as a young boy and obviously had an immense impact on your life. And I wonder if you could just share that with your audience. And traveling as a young boy with your dad to a couple golf tournaments where, rather than hyper-focused on the play, you really just wanted to get close to the broadcasters.
I think my parents must have been wondering, what's wrong with our boy Jimmy? You know, he's sure he's a sports fan, but he's more fixated on the voices that are covering these sports And I was fortunate that my parents were were willing enablers for me to make sure that I got to be somewhere in the area in the same sphere as some of these legends of my youth. So every year, we would go to Florida, living in New Jersey, during our winter break or spring break, whatever it was. Now, we couldn't afford to fly, so we'd get in the car as a family, have an older sister, and we would drive to Florida. It would take 2 days. You know, my father would drive for 12 hours and pull up. We'd stay at a Holiday Inn, next day get back in the car, and we would go the week, whatever my school week off matched up with. We go to Jacksonville for a tour event, or Fort Lauderdale, the Jackie Gleason Enduro Classic, or Doral, wherever the tour was during the Florida swing, which matched up with our school vacation. They would go there as a gift to their son. And as I got older, they, you know, even entrusted me to drop me off. You know, now like 13 years old. And again, I would run around all day and just hang out by the bottom of the broadcast towers, just hoping I could somehow get a peek, a look at, and faintly, even possibly faintly hear their voices. I mean, I knew when they would be cutting to the action on a hole with one of the leaders, and I would be well positioned to be right underneath their perch, and I could strain to hear them describing the action. I just thought it was the coolest thing. And, yeah, I did it a number of times. And I'm just grateful that my parents and it didn't put the kibosh on their little boy's dream, because it was a strong one. I mean, I knew since I was 11 years old I wanted to be one of those voices. And, you know, I even, getting away from golf, one year my dad got tickets to the NIT final in the Madison Square Garden. And it was Georgia Tech against North Carolina. I should look it up, but it's somewhere around 1971. I would have been 11 years old. So the Garden was not completely packed, and the broadcast position for the announcers, which you might remember this, wasn't right on the court. It was like 10 rows up center court. It was like 10 rows up, right over one of those little entry vestibules, tunnels to the court.
Right.
There was a broadcast position in the stands, so to speak, and the seats behind the announcers was open. And my dad says, "Come on, Jimmy, we'll take you over there and until they kick us out." And we sat behind, it was on CBS, the NIT. I sat behind Don Crickey and Pat Summerall calling the game.
Wow.
I could completely hear them. There was no shield, no cover. It was just no glass pane in between them and the fans. I mean, I could have reached out and given them a neck rub. I was right there. And that was a thrill. That was a thrill. So I've never forgotten that. I appreciate you remembering that yourself, Richard. And as I climb up those stairs every week for a football, basketball, or a golf tournament, and I see some young kid down there with his father, it instantly brings back some very warm memories of being able to do those things with my dad and how he really helped me fulfill my dream.
The Canadian Open Men's Golf Championship will take place at Glen Abbey in July the 23rd to the 29th. You have an invitation, Mr. Nance, to join us in studio. We hope you can make it. And we thank you for your time today.
I thank you so much. Richard, good luck on all this. I know how beloved you are up in Canada and Toronto, and I know you've done this in the past. And I know the magic of this station because I've listened when I've been up there before. And I really, it would mean a lot to me just to come up and hang out for an afternoon. So I look forward to it. I'll remind you. So thanks, guys. Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim, for your time. We appreciate it. Jim Nance of CBS Sports.